Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be a little spacey. I'm being a little bit of a stinker when I say that, but we're going to be talking about Cosmic Conversations. This is a publication that presents viewpoints from many different individuals regarding their particular positionings, their paradigms of observation of what's going on in today's world on a scientific level, on a spiritual level, etc. The gentleman that helped to put this all together is Stephen Martin. And Stephen, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thanks, Don. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you're a man that has a fascinating background. You're an astronomer. You've been involved in education. You've taught astronomy and physics at so many different educational centers around the United States. Now, currently, you are the assistant professor of astronomy at Bristol Community College in southeastern Massachusetts. You have had a lot of study that you've done into what we call dark matter, infrared studies of spiral galaxies, and solar coronas. I mean, this sounds like something out of Star Trek.
It does. I mean, we really live in a mysterious universe.
We do, and it's so exciting.
I think so. There's so much to discover and so much yet we haven't uncovered yet.
Now, you love to teach.
I do. I love sharing knowledge and just awakening insight and wisdom in others.
Now, here you are. You've put this book together. First, I'd like to ask you, because you have so many interesting people. You have Brian Swimming, Fred Allen Wolf, who's been a guest on my show, Peter Russell, who's been a guest, Bernard Esch. You know, there's just Barbara Max Hubbard, all of these people and more that you have in your book just were so open to sharing your time. How did you put all of this together? How did you coordinate all of this with all of these wonderful people who have phenomenal thoughts about the universe and about various aspects of it? How were you able to compile the list, first of all? And secondly, how long did it take you to put all of this material together?
Well, the idea for the book first came to me, several years ago when I suddenly realized as an astronomer, I've been studying the universe my entire life, and yet I still have no idea what it is. I mean, it's quite a paradox to study something and still, you know, feel you don't know very much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wondered, well, if I don't know what the universe is, maybe other people might have insights. And so I started approaching people in different fields, you know, people that I thought were really on the cutting edge of new paradigm thinking and really exciting discoveries about the universe. And I started approaching these people and say, hey, do you want to have a conversation about the universe?
Mm-hmm.
And they were very generous, very receptive, very open to it. And so bit by bit, we started to coordinate finding times to meet in person or to talk on the phone or, you know, to do these interviews and have these, you know, what I call cosmic conversations about what's really going on there. And so I asked each person, you know, well, what do you think the universe is? What is it for you? Because I think we're involved in a very profound mystery that we need to study from different perspectives. Each one kind of reveals a different facet of what we're involved in here.
I loved how right in the beginning, in the introduction, you present the question, what is the universe? And you talk about the Wari people of the Western Amazon. And they have their own particular view. And I thought to myself after reading it, this isn't so different from a lot of people today. What is their view? What was it you discovered?
Well, their view is that the universe is essentially spiritual energy. In other words, it's constantly in flow. Things are always in flux. They're changing. There's flowing. For them, the world is imbued with spirits and spiritual power. And like many indigenous peoples, they work to align themselves with the spirits through ritual, through ceremony, through intention. And they really have a very profound worldview that really brings together themselves with the natural world, with the cosmos, in a very integrated way. And I think it's very valuable to consider these kinds of perspectives, because it seems to me that, you know, at least our mainstream worldview is somewhat fragmented. We think, well, there's science, and then there's religion, and then there's nature, and then there's, you know, humans, and it doesn't quite move together in quite an integrated way. So I think it's very helpful to consider these cultures, many of whom are very old and have lived in harmony with nature for thousands of years. I think they may have a lot to teach us.
Well, I agree, and I think in our world today, because we are finally getting a level of cognizance that everything is connected. Nothing is separate and over here on a little shelf somewhere. Whether you're dealing with fungi in a pile of dirt, there is an infrastructure of connection that goes on. You can all go all the way up to the human body. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal to me when you look at all of these connections. And what's happened is we have disconnected because of ignorance, fear, and superstition. And all of a sudden we're going, wait a minute, we've got to pay attention. Specialization is wonderful, but it's all part of the package. And
so
we have to, you know, we have to look at a bigger paradigm. And it, I think it's exciting. But for a lot of people, it's like, whoa, wait a minute. I just don't know how to think that big.
I know. And I think this is why we need, you know, people who work with the big picture, you know, like myself and others, to sort of bring it down to, you know, our earthly level, our everyday level, and to show people how they're actually connected to the cosmos, how they're connected to, you know, the whole circle of life that we're involved in. And Donna, I think you're right in that our science has really specialized in studying things as separate little entities, and we've forgotten about the connections between things, which are just as important. And it's interesting that as we go deeper into studying things, we find there's underlying connections. We find there's a unity. There's this interconnectedness that you've talked about that's really quite profound, and it's all around us.
It's really amazing. I don't see how anyone can look really at anything without a sense of awe, whether it is watching machines work in a manufacturing facility to looking at a little tiny flower that has burst through a piece of granite, and you go, how'd you do that? It's amazing. You go, how'd you do that?
How could something so delicate be so strong?
That's right. And how could it split a piece of granite? I mean, it's just amazing. Let's talk about Brian Swim for a minute, because in your chapter there were a couple of things that really grabbed my attention. One, he brought in the interview about something about a Clifford Matthews, who's a professor of chemistry at the University of Illinois.
Yes.
And this professor said, we're recycled stardust. And I love that. I thought that was a wonderful verbal visual. And then also he brought up the word phenomenology. What neat things to toss out to people. Say, do you know anything about phenomenology? And they go, duh.
Right.
When he was talking about this, what was he sharing with you?
Well, first of all, having a conversation with Brian Swim is just magical in itself. I mean, he has this childlike wonder for the universe and yet this profound understanding of the dynamics behind it. And so we had a wonderful conversation on so many levels. And, you know, in the part where he mentions Clifford Matthews, he was saying we can really summarize everything we know about the universe through modern science in these four words, and that we are recycled stardust. I mean, it's just such a simple encapsulation of everything we've learned in terms of how it's important to us. The fact that we are recycled stardust is amazing. I mean, it's profound.
I'd love saying that to a child. Can you imagine telling them as they're feeling down and out, do you know you're recycled stardust? What a wonderful thing to say to somebody.
Isn't it? Oh, yeah.
I love it. I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Brian also has a wonderful way of saying, in a different way, he says, you know, the stars have given birth to us. In other words, our whole history goes back to the beginning of time. And the energy that, you know, began in the Big Bang and created the matter around us is still flowing through us right now. In fact, we are that energy in a particular form. I think that's such a mind-blowing view to think that we are the energy of the universe flowing into the universe right now.
You interviewed Bernard Haisch. He's an astrophysicist. He's published more than 130 scientific publications. He's been involved with NASA on a lot of projects. He was the deputy director for the Center for Extreme Ultraviolet Astrophysics at the University of California, as well as being a staff scientist at Lockheed Martin Solar and Astrophysics Laboratory. And most of us go, excuse me, this just isn't something I encounter in everyday conversation. But he has gotten involved with a lot of information on zero-point energy. What is zero-point energy?
Well, zero-point energy is this energy that comes out of what's called the virtual quantum field. In other words, all around us, we're surrounded, and the way he frames it is we're surrounded in a sea of light. In other words, everything we see around us, matter, atoms, energy, they're all emerging spontaneously from a sea of light. So if you look at the universe at very, very fine levels, you find what's called the zero-point energy. And this is basically an energy field from which everything seems to come.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say just it's interesting because there's parallels, you know, with so many of the spiritual traditions that say, you know, at the very deep level of things, we find there's this profound light. So there's
mm-hmm.
this light of insight. There's this, you know, the light of God. And here he's been studying, you know, what's this light of the universe that comes, you know, seemingly out of nowhere and at some point generates the world we live in.
It's fascinating thought, and that's what your book, Cosmic Conversations, does. It brings out these different perspectives that these people, through their research, et cetera, have, and it is changing the demeanor of scientific investigation because it's showing that science and spirituality really are hand in hand. They're not exclusive. Now, religion is different. I mean, now that's something else. But spirituality exists. It just is in all levels, and it belongs to everyone. But this was a comment that he made that I thought was fascinating. Zero-point fluctuations are the thing that push time along and make things happen. You need something to make physical processes go. And I thought, what a perspective.
Yeah.
That is just absolutely amazing to me. Now, let's talk about Fred Allen Wolf. He's a hoot.
He
has just got such a good sense of humor.
Oh, he's so delightful, and he's so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's such a good teacher in terms of being able to take very, very, you know, arcane and complex concepts and really explaining them in an everyday way. I mean, he's really a wonderful communicator.
So much
fun to talk to.
He really, really is. What was the most significant point with Fred Allen Wolf that you felt he emphasized during the interview that you had?
Well, we talked about this at one point, and it really sticks in my mind, and that he really said, you know, the universe, whatever it is, and we both agreed, we don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it doesn't want to be put in a box.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, whatever you try to say, okay, this is it, you know, now I've got the universe, and I can say, okay, we're done, here it is. It's going to come up with some other surprise that's going to be outside the box. It's going to blow apart any box we try to put it in because it's so playful, it's so mysterious, it's so dynamic that it just simply refuses to be encapsulated by anything we can think that it is.
Dean Radin is a man that has been deeply involved in researching. And this man is very dedicated to it. This is not somebody that does the woo-woo at all. He is really down to earth, bare bones. These are facts. Very much involved in psychic and paranormal, parapsychology. This is something to him because he's seen so much evidence for it, and he wants to be able to expand on this. He's a fascinating man, and he's currently the senior scientist at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. The man has just a fascinating background, including being an accomplished violinist. But one of the points that he brought out in your interview, which I thought was very interesting, was relating to the quality of attention or intention when people want to develop their psychic abilities. Let's go into that for a little bit.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating because, you know, as you mentioned, he's probably the world's leading researcher on paranormal phenomenon. And so he's really done these experiments in the lab, and he's very familiar with the scientific basis for the data. And what the data seems to show is, more than anything else, it's the quality of our attention that determines whether we manifest these, you know, psychic or ESP or precognitive phenomena. So in mm-hmm. other words, if we're, you know, scattered, as many of us are throughout the day, doing so many different things, multitasking, all these things, our psychic ability seems to be very low. But if we're able to concentrate that attention, you know, attention and intention, then that seems to really raise our psychic possibilities to a much higher level. In fact, it's one reason why with many of these psychic experiments that they've conducted, they've chosen to use advanced meditators and athletes and people who have a very developed sense of focus, because they find that they tend to have much greater capacities.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of, you know, their innate capacities, but their ability to focus their mind, and that seems to be where the psychic phenomena show up.
And that is a discipline. That is
it
very,
is.
Very much a discipline. I've been involved in the work of mind for so many years, and I know through the years people would say, how can you do what you do? My husband used to watch me work, and he'd say, there's a din of noise around you. It would absolutely drive me nuts. I don't know how you handle it. I don't
mm-hmm.
hear it. I don't hear it. It's as if I go into what I call the zone. And when you're in that zone, you're focused. You're just sending and receiving. You just do that. And then when you're finished, it's like, oh, okay, there was a
mm-hmm.
fire next door. Isn't that interesting? They had fire
right.
agents. Isn't that interesting?
Right.
You don't hear it. It's a fascinating patterning of discipline. And it's something you can teach yourself. In fact, children that have ADHD, autism, you have your savants, they can have that level of focus in ways that most people cannot identify with. And if it's channeled properly, they can become very accomplished. It's just quite amazing. Quite amazing.
It really is. And I think it's important to note that it's something that can be developed.
Yes.
That, you know, it's an innate capacity that we all have, and we can choose to develop it by, you know, choosing to develop our capacity to focus.
You had a couple, Hamid Ali and Karen Johnson. These two people you interviewed, and they have been working together for more than 30 years in an area. My goodness, when they started this, they probably were thought to be from another planet. They wanted to find out about the direct relationship between human experience and the underlying nature of reality. Let's talk about this unique couple for a while.
Yeah, it's pretty deep stuff. I mean, they're both very advanced spiritual teachers, and they began working with each other. They're not married, but they're teachers that work together.
Mm-hmm.
And they've discovered that we can actually discover something very deep about the universe through our personal experience. In other words, if you pay very fine attention and you have an interest and a curiosity in your experience, it tends to unfold and it tends to reveal more about its nature. And they find that, you know, because we are not just in the universe, but because we actually are the universe in mm-hmm. human form, we can discover some profound insights about the universe through basically investigating our own direct experience. And so they're constantly pointing us back to, well, what's your direct experience? You know,
mm-hmm.
how are you feeling? What are you perceiving? How does it show up in your body? And they've developed, you know, I guess you would call it an approach or a spiritual perspective called the Diamond Approach, that's really based on this capacity to inquire into experience and discover the nature of reality directly. So it's really very much a mystical path that they're involved with.
I'm always intrigued when people share their stories, how they will have various views. Their experiences have opened up a window into the unknown in such a way that it is comfortable for them. Sometimes it's not comfortable, but usually it's done in a way that reaches them. The mind is a fascinating something. You can't encapsulate it. It just is.
Right.
And it's so vast and it's so diverse that you cannot put it in a box. You just, in no way can you limit it. And I know when I've taught classes, my students have taught me for years how diverse they are. And they astonish themselves many times with their own diversity and thinking that they should not enjoy that, but they should try to be in a box of some kind, be mm-hmm. in some kind of restriction. And when you are aware that you don't need to be restricted, that can be very liberating, but at the same time, it can be very frightening because that means you have to have courage to be open and to be unafraid of the unknown.
Very much so. And I think a key element of that is also being vulnerable, being open and mm-hmm. receiving the unknown to discover, well, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
What is it for me? But it's also tremendously exciting. I mean, I just get such a thrill in the process of discovery. I can't wait to find out what happens next.
Oh, it's marvelous. It's absolutely marvelous.
Yeah, it's scientific research or your own mind or someone else's experience. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just all fascinating.
Oh, it is. And that's what I like is the tremendous diversity. Now, let's talk about a Native American, an Oglala Lakota healer. He's also a visionary. Black Elk, for a moment, he said that the first piece, which is the most important, is that which comes within the souls of people when they realize their relationship, their oneness with the universe and all its powers, and when they realize that at the center of the universe dwells Wakantanka, and that this center is really everywhere. It is within each of us. Now, Black Elk was such a visionary, and he left such a phenomenal legacy. You have Gabriel Horn in your book. He is wanting to encourage people to discover that legacy. He's written a number of books. And I think it's wonderful that he's wanting to bring forth the wisdom of the past. We can't go backwards. In fact, I wouldn't want to go backwards. We've got so much to look forward to. Let's move on to wherever we're going to move on to. But the wisdom of the past you should not throw away because it holds true no matter what generation it is shared with. What was the most wonderful part of the experience with Gabriel?
Well, Gabriel, first, of course, is, you know, a wonderful, warm-hearted person. I mean, he's truly an elder, and it was really, you know, an honor to actually speak with him. And one thing that really struck me in talking with him was his reverence and his humility, you know, especially for the Mother Earth. He says, you know, the Mother Earth, you know, she's the source of everything. And just this profound sense of humility at being, you know, not just in life, but a part of all life. And in fact, I was struck by a particular point in our interview where we were talking about the importance of water. And he was talking about, you know, the difference between the West, where we will thank God for water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says, well, Native Americans were different. We thank the water directly. So when we, you know, go to the stream or we take a drink, we say, thank you, water. I thought that was quite a profound shift.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go through any higher authority. They don't go through an intermediary. They go directly to the things themselves, and they thank the water, and they thank the sun, and they thank the moon. It's really a very direct and profound relationship that Native Americans and indigenous peoples all over the world have with life.
I found it fascinating that among his culture that they don't have a word for forgiveness, forgiving.
Yes.
That was really very interesting.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's fascinating to see the cultural difference because there's no asking for forgiveness because there is no word for it. I mean, you simply, you know, make right what you have wronged.
Right. He said you have to accept your responsibility. Now,
yes,
that's something that we've gotten very sloppy about. We don't hold
people
accountable. And in his culture, you were held accountable. You, like you said, you had to do whatever was necessary. If you did something wrong or harmed someone, that you had to be, he said, forgiving you, forget it. He said, you have to accept responsibility for what you did and then do something that is going to create a balance in some way. And it's a perspective that's a fascinating one that maybe a lot of people would take issue with. But this is diversity.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we need to be open to and receptive to. And what happens is it may even enable us to become stronger and more aware of ourselves with a sense of balance with our environment. Now, you have Alusa Tish. This woman is African. She just has so much to share about this, but I would love for you to talk about what it was that impressed you most with her. She's a storyteller. She's written all kinds of things. She's been involved with different organizations. What was her special message?
Well, it was such a pleasure to be with her because she's such a, you know, a round, wonderful, generous, joyful woman. And so she has this big, hearty laugh. And every time I heard that, I knew that all was right with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So she has this innate trust and this profound sense of connection with the cosmos, which comes to her, you know, through her teachers, through her ancestors, through her, you know, the deep wisdom of Africa, which she really embodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, her, along with all the other indigenous and spiritual peoples, they really have this profound, you know, combination of humility and trust, and saying, you know, no matter what happens, everything is really okay. And I was just so impressed by that there isn't a sense of panic. Now, they still have their good days and their bad days, but they know, you know, it's just the universe working itself out. And she's funny because she talks about kind of the arguments she has with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, it's like, well, you know, I asked for this and you gave me that. What's going on here?
She's a woman after my own heart. There's many times I've put in calls to the universal switchboard and said, excuse me, I need to talk to somebody.
Right. And then somebody shows
working.
Up.
Exactly. Yeah. And so nobody answers me for some reason. I go, I don't like this. I'm being ignored. The customer service department is not doing its job.
That's right.
Oh, that's so much fun. Well, you know, you've got so many wonderful, wonderful people. You have Etta Zavala talking about the macrocosm and the microcosm. You have another section of the book dealing with culture. It's broken into different sections here, spirituality, science, culture. Then you had Barbara Max Hubbard, delightful woman. You've got so many wonderful, wonderful people in here, and I think each of them give such a wonderful gift in their conversation with you, and I think you represent them so beautifully and so well. Stephen, when you finish this,
mm-hmm.
What happened to you? I mean, when we do a book and we finish it, did you say to yourself, wow, there's even more for me to discover? What was it that you were given in the way of a gift by doing this book?
Well, I think what you said is right on, in that it's like, oh, even after writing this book and considering all these different perspectives, I feel like I've only just scratched the surface. I mean, it's just so much more profound than I ever thought it could be. And it's funny because even though I feel like I know less about the universe than when I began the book,
mm-hmm.
I feel that I'm all the more wiser for having discovered that. So I feel that I feel myself as more a part of the universe, as embodying its energy, as embodying its feelings, its perspectives. So I feel like I really have begun to sort of learn what it means to not just be in the universe, but to actually be the universe itself. So it's really been quite a profound transformation, and very humbling as well. It's really humbling to discover how much you don't know and how much more there is than what you do know.
That is exciting. Now, Stephen, what is your website? So people can go to your website, find out more about what you're doing. Where would they go?
Okay, it's www.cosmicconversations.org. And there's information about myself, about the book, about the contributors, and about lectures and events that I have coming up as well.
CosmicConversations.org. This book is fascinating. If you believe in investing in yourself and just exploring something that might be an entirely different thought that you have never even approached, Cosmic Conversations are good. I'd say you could just read one person's interview at a time. It's very well done. It's in the layperson's language, very comfortable reading, and thought-provoking. Stephen Martin, I want to thank you for your time today. Your book, Cosmic Conversations, offer a lot. Dialogues on the nature of the universe and the search for reality with some fabulously fascinating people. Go to his website, cosmicconversations.org. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756 if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Now, I want to remind you, if you've had a special experience, paranormal, seen a ghost, whatever, I'd love to know your story. Send it to me because I'm putting together a book. I've started collecting 100 stories, and I've gotten some wonderful, wonderful responses from people, and I would love to hear your story. If you would like to share it so other people would be aware that they're not alone when they're going through certain experiences that others have had, similar or their own particular unique happenings, again, I'd love to hear from you. So send it to me via email, Donna at DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna at DelphiInternational.com. Be sure to put your contact information in because this is all going into a file, and I'm accumulating all of these stories so that I can share them with others. And this book probably would be coming out in about a year, year and a half. And once the publishing house would get the information, of course, they may want to have release papers signed so that we have your permission to print it in the publication. But regardless, just let me know and send it to me. If you want to send it via snail mail, send it to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Also, I want to mention the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. It is coming up so fast, March 5th, 6th, and 7th. This is such a dynamic event, and I just am absolutely thrilled to be a part of it. I've been participating for a number of years. It is so exciting. 40,000 women plus come out for this weekend event. They bring in their friends. It is party time. You have magnificently wonderful programs that are going to be put on. You have all kinds of vendors with products from around the world, and you've got food, and it is just shop to your drop time, but it's a wonderful way to get together with your buddies and just make a weekend experience of the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. Now, I'm going to be in booth number 407. And this year I have been invited to also put together another forum of women speakers. On Friday the 5th, starting at 1 o'clock, the first hour we're going to have two speakers addressing financial issues. The second hour we'll be talking about energy healing. The third hour we're going to be talking about animals, their care and their well-being. We're going to have six dynamic women from the Pacific Northwest, all highly regarded in their areas of expertise. Now, you can go to the Pacific, you can go to the NorthwestWomensShow.com, you can go to their website, you'll see a listing of all the ladies that I'm going to be interacting with. I'll be interviewing them, they'll be talking about their books, etc. And then you're also going to be able to see the times when each person is going to be up. So on Friday, March the 5th, I am going to be there at the Women's Show. And, of course, also, I'm going to be in booth 407, as I've mentioned, and I'm going to be doing many consultations with people as well. So you'll be able to interact with me in that respect. And I'm going to have a whole bunch of books there, too. That's something I've become known for, are the wonderful, wonderful array of publications that I have there available for you if you're interested in getting any. So just know that you need to mark it on your calendar. It is a dynamic woman's event. And I'll tell you what, hey, guys, if you're in the Pacific Northwest and your wife wants to go, come along. You will get so much information about women that you never even had a clue about. And it's in a safe environment. Nobody's going to put you down for it. It's great. It's fun. And who knows, you might find that special gift for that special lady in your life as well. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I want to thank those of you who are sending me emails with wonderful stories and different things that you would like for me to share. And this one came from Debbie, and she said, Donna, this is about safety earthquake procedures. Now, in the Pacific Northwest, we have an awareness that we are vulnerable for earthquakes. We have the mountain range that's within the Ring of Fire experience, and we've had our share of earthquakes here. Not as much as in California, but we do have them, and we're vulnerable. So because of what happened in Haiti, this is some information that was sent out by Debbie to me. She said it came from a gentleman by the name of Doug Kopp. He's the rescue chief and disaster manager of the American Rescue Team International. It's called ARTI, or ARTI. It's the world's most experienced rescue team. And he said, here are tips for earthquake safety. One, most everyone who simply ducks and covers when buildings collapsed are crushed to death. Think of those visuals that you've seen about Haiti. People who get under objects like desks or cars are crushed. Two, cats, dogs, and babies often naturally curl up in the fetal position. You should, too, if there is an earthquake going on. It's a natural safety survival instinct. You can survive in a smaller void. Get next to an object, maybe a sofa next to a large bulky object that will compress slightly, but leave a void next to it. I think of a woman who was under a mattress that the bed, the building had collapsed, and the bed gave her oxygen, where, you know, it gave her that barrier, so she had oxygen. She didn't have food, obviously, or water, but she was able to move, and she was not crushed. And this has happened with many people that they were able to rescue. Wooden buildings are the safest type of construction to be in during an earthquake. Wood is flexible and moves with the force of an earthquake. So if a wooden building does collapse, large survival voids are created. Also, the wooden building has less concentrated crushing weight. Brick buildings will break into individual bricks. Bricks will cause many injuries, but less squashed bodies than concrete slabs. Now, if you're in bed during the night and an earthquake occurs, simply roll off the bed. A safe void, like I just mentioned, will exist around the bed. Hotels can achieve a much greater survival rate in earthquakes simply by posting a sign on the back of the door of every room telling occupants to lie down on the floor next to the bottom of the bed during an earthquake. Now, if you're experiencing an earthquake and you cannot easily escape by getting out the door or window, then lie down, curl up in the fetal position next to a sofa or a large chair. Almost everyone who gets under a doorway when buildings collapse are killed. Why? If you stand under a doorway and the door jamb falls forward or backward, you'll be crushed by the ceiling above. If the door jamb falls sideways, you'll be cut in half by the doorway. In either case, your opportunity for survival is minimal. Never go to the stairs. Stairs have a different moment of frequency. They swing separately from the main part of the building. Stairs and the remainder of the building continuously bump into each other until structural failure of the stairs takes place. People who get on stairs before they fail are chopped up by the stair treads. They are really horribly, horribly mutilated, is the word he chose. Even if the building doesn't collapse, stay away from stairs. Stairs are a likely part of the building to be damaged. Even if the stairs are not collapsed by the earthquake, they may collapse later when overloaded by people who are trying to get out. They should always be checked for safety, even when the rest of the building is not damaged. Don't get near or absolutely get near the outer walls of buildings or outside of them. If possible, it's better to be near the outside of a building rather than the interior. The farther inside you are from the outside perimeter of the building, the greater the probability that your escape route will be blocked. People inside their vehicles are crushed when the road above falls in an earthquake and crushes them, which is exactly what happened with the slabs between the decks of the Nimitz Freeway. The victims of the San Francisco earthquake all stayed inside their vehicles. They were all killed. They could have easily survived by getting out and sitting or lying next to the vehicles. Everyone killed would have survived if they had been able to get out of their cars and sit or lie next to them. All the crushed cars had voids 3 feet high next to them, except for the cars that had columns falling directly across them. And Doug found when crawling inside of collapsed newspaper offices and other offices with lots of paper, the paper does not compact. Large voids are found surrounding stacks of paper. Spread the word and save someone's life. The entire world is experiencing natural calamities, so be prepared. I thought I would share that with you because I thought it's good information no matter where you might be. And earthquakes happen in places that most of the time we don't even think they're going to be hitting. But that's the way life is. That's just about the unique, the unusual. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I want to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Extraterrestrial Answer Book with Jim Maroney. This book is wonderful. We're going to have so many fun things to talk about if you're interested in ETs. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with a young soldier, Michael Anthony. He was a medic in the Middle East. His book is titled Mass Casualties, and he has written about some fascinating things. So we're going to be hearing from a young man who has walked the walk of learning about being a medic and seeing the real face of war. So this is something I think you will find very interesting. I want to share with you a story I'd promised that I would talk about. It's called The Possession of Maria Tallarico. And before we do that, I just want to remind you that if you want to call in, the number is 888-815-9756. Also, on March 9th, I am going to be on Achieve Radio with Monica Chapman. This is a wonderful woman. We've done shows before, and it's her show, Walking with Spirit. I'll be on air with her live from 6 to 7 the evening of March the 9th. So we're going to be talking about intuition. The phone lines will be open for phone calls. So check out Monique. It's not Monica. It's Monique Chapman. Check out her site, and you will find Walking with Spirit is a wonderful, wonderful place to visit. She is a great lady. She's been a friend, and I've known her for years, so I feel very privileged that she invites me to be her guest. We're taking a break for just a moment. We're going to be back, and those phone lines are open if you wanted to chat with me. 888-815-9756.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Possession. This is a subject that's always been controversial, but dependent on what your cultural background is, you may or may not be aware of various situations and conditions that have evolved through the centuries. People tell stories. I have yet to encounter a culture that is not aware of this to one degree or another. Well, on February 13th, 1936, there was a documented experience of possession. Then it started with this, these circumstances. On February 13th, 1936, Pepe Veraldi was discovered dead under a bridge spanning the Coras River in Italy. Now, a large stone laid under this person's head, and this person was a teenager. His broken arm was twisted under his torso. Now, the verdict was made that he was drunk and despondent over a woman and had jumped to his death. Earlier in the evening, on February 13th, Pepe had gone to the back room of a tavern where he and his friends were playing cards. And later on, people saw all five of the men leaving together. 3 years later, so we're looking at 1939, there was a teenager, Maria Tallarico. She was walking by this bridge where Pepe had died, collapsed, and had to be carried home. Upon awakening, she wasn't talking in her own voice. She was speaking in a hoarse voice, claiming to be Pepe, demanded cigarettes, wine, a deck of cards, and also to see his mother, Catarina Veraldi. Well, this was quite a surprise to everybody. Catarina sent around a photograph of a girl to be identified, and when Pepe recognized the girl as his sister, his mother, Catarina, she then came in person. Now, Pepe, who had died 3 years before, was speaking through Maria, informed her that his friends had murdered him, beating him with a piece of iron and setting up the suicide scenario. He said that of his companions that night, Abel had died, Toto had moved to South America, Rosario was in service in East Africa, and Damanio was on his way to the house as he was relating this information to Maria. They checked out the facts. Every single one of them were correct. Now, shortly after, Pepe, speaking through Maria, complaining of leg pain, fled back to the bridge, climbed down the steep bank, and Maria, because Pepe was using her body, positioned herself on the rocks exactly as Pepe had been found. Her head was on the same stone. She lost consciousness. Katerina spoke to her son, who was occupying Maria's body, demanded that he leave her body, and the teenage girl woke up. She was herself again. Now, Toto wrote to Katerina 12 years later, and he confessed to the murder of her son. He had been jealously convinced that Pepe was having an affair with his wife. What evolved out of that was Toto, when he died, left to Katerina, Pepe's mother, a small fortune. Life is really interesting, and you never know what's going to happen. But that's a situation where someone who had been murdered said that the truth had to be known and used another person's body to bring forward the facts, and it was verified. Just thought that'd be a little bit of interest to share it with you today. Let's talk about food for a minute. What is your favorite international cuisine? Is it Mexican, French, Indian, Italian, Japanese, Chinese? Well, if you like them all, you're going to love what I have to share with you. There was a study done. I know, there's all of these studies that go on. I think sometimes people really get bored. They don't know what else to do. But there was a psychologist, David Eigen, and he said, what you enjoy in the way of food really, really tells a lot about you. So let me share some of this with you. What if you love Indian food? Well, in his mind's eye, you're a stress-defying adventurer. Wow, isn't that exciting? You really like a total sensory experience. He said because you love spice, color, aroma, and that's Indian food. You are super inventive. You're always looking to challenge yourself and your taste buds, and you have a stress-proof kind of temperament that enables you to stretch past and redefine whatever limits you may have. So you're not afraid of changing your paradigm. Now, what if you're one of these people? You like Italian. Hey, Italian, well, if you like that kind of food, you're going to be a warm wit. Yeah, W-I-T. Why? Because Italian food is a comfort cuisine. By the way, the Italians taught the French to cook and a lot of other people to cook, and they really know about good food. Italian food is a perfect complement to get-togethers, discussions. The Italians love their food. They like good food, and they enjoy good conversation. It's a social, charming part of life, and you really enjoy that kind of an environment, and you enjoy experimenting with your menu, but you really enjoy the environment. So not only are you a warm wit, you're a very social person. Now, if you love Japanese, you're a chic tastemaker. Why? Because Japanese food is a very clean cuisine. It's healthy. It's served in a very precise, visually attractive manner, and you enjoy the artistic visual that the food, when it's served, presents. You have discerning taste. You are not a person that gets caught up with materialism. You like to choose carefully in your life. You're very discerning. Now, French. Ah, vive la France. You're a hard-charging sophisticated. And why? French food is known for its rich creams and sauces. You like delicate flavors. You have a sensitive palate, and you're confident. You have self-motivation. You're sophisticated. You really enjoy having wonderful food that's going to taste the palate. You don't need gigantic servings. You want something that really is going to satisfy you. And then if Chinese is something you like, you're fascinatingly complex. Chinese food is full of contrasting flavors, sweet, sour. Well, that's something you thoroughly enjoy because you're full of contradictions. You're sensitive, you're romantic, one moment, then the next moment you can be in charge and focus the next. You're an enigma. Nobody's ever really going to figure you out. You're an interesting person to know. And last but not least, Mexican. You like variety. Mexican flavors, influences of Mayan, Aztec, and Spanish, and more. You thrive on variety, whether it's a fried burrito to rice and beans, it doesn't make any difference. You like to take an idea, turn it into a creative whirlwind. Well, I know I'm out of time. It's been so delightful to be with you. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is a wonderful experience, and no matter what your favorite cuisine is, diversity is the spice of life, whether it's in food, in experience, whatever. It empowers you. Grasp it. Enjoy it. Don't be afraid. You may discover you have something special inside of yourself you never knew was there. This is Donna. Tomorrow we'll be talking about ETs right here, same time, same place. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.